And tomorrow, we are hoping that we're going to see the biggest protest that the world has ever seen around climate change. 150 countries, including South Africa, taking part in the global strike. That's an absolute call for action because climate change, I believe, is the greatest crisis facing humanity. I've done numerous interviews about the UN IPCC report. And it's driven home by scientists over and over again. It's a crisis, and the message is just not getting out there. Mark New is the director of the African Climate and Development Initiative at the University of Cape Town. He's been working on climate change detection for 2 decades now. He recently wrote a piece for The Conversation. Mark, thanks so much for your time this afternoon.
Yeah, hi. It's a pleasure.
How do we... I know news organizations are coming together and really committing to driving home this message, but how do we speak about the urgency when a lot of people kind of zone out when we just say climate change?
It is a hard one because I think climate change is challenging to all of us because it's much easier for us to keep on with the habits that we kind of that we know are perhaps not very climate friendly. But I think one way to think about it is to look at our own experiences of what we call weather risk rather than climate risk. And the Cape Town drought is one of the most recent ways where we can feel what climate change actually means as it comes, as most of the biggest risks are actually felt through weather. And what we're seeing now is that there's an imprint of climate change on these weather events and increasing the risk to us. So that really brings it home, I think, to us in a very real way in terms of recognizing that some of the extremes that we experience and affect us in different ways actually are being made more severe by climate change.
And we can't say we weren't warned. And I was watching Greta Thunberg appearing in before Congress in the US, and she said, I'm not going to testify, I'm just going to hand over the UN IPCC report. Why is that report so important?
Because it's a very rigorous and robust assessment of all of the scientific evidence. It goes through an enormous review process where anybody, regardless of their views on man-made climate change, can review it. The authors of this report have to deal with literally hundreds of thousands of comments on the different drafts. So it is essentially the most rigorous statement on the evidence about climate change, what the potential impacts would be, and what the most appropriate responses would be. And that's really is the, if you like, it's the manual for fixing the climate system. And then it's around actually, as they say, RTF, reading the manual and actually doing the work. And that's where we have the problem in the sense that there are many competing political and economic agendas around this. And some people have other priorities that don't put climate change at the top of the agenda.
For people listening who do want to make a difference, the other problem, you know, I listened to John's interview around the planting of trees. There are also so many conflicting reports about what's right and what's wrong and what makes an impact and doesn't. You know, when people say, what must I do? What would your answer be?
It's a tough one. I think there are quite a few different things one can do. I think getting involved in these climate strikes is really important. And that's particularly the case for younger people because they're the ones who are going to be inheriting this problem. And taking part in climate strikes is one way of sending a political message. The school kids who are out there today are the voters in the next election. And so making climate change an electoral issue makes it a political issue, which I think can make a big difference. You can also be an activist in the way that you interact with, if you like, the levers of money. So we have a big debate going on at the University of Cape Town at the moment about whether the university's pension fund should take part in the in the divestment sort of campaign, which is essentially only investing our pension funds in companies that meet certain criteria in terms of environmental sustainability. And so you could be asking your pension fund managers, what are they doing about sort of being proactive in this space? And then obviously there's a lot of personal activities that one can take that make a little difference, but if everyone makes a little difference, it all adds up. I was quite amused by the advert that you had for the Ford Everest, which is a rather fuel gobbling vehicle, and we could be trying to actually switch from those kind of vehicles to other vehicles, for instance.
One listener is asking about, the impact of animal agriculture on climate change.
Yeah.
Food habits.
Yeah, so we do know that that meat is basically the most damaging form of protein in most instances, especially where the meat is produced through intensive farming. And there was a recent special report by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which talked about interactions between climate change and land use. And the clear recommendation in there was that one should try and eat less meat. It doesn't mean you have to become vegan, but there's certainly the amounts of meat consumption that that occur in largely in the developed world, if those were sort of replicated and scaled out to everybody in the global population, that would have a huge impact, both on the impact of farmland itself, but also in terms of those emissions from agriculture and particularly livestock farming.
That UN report essentially says that within a decade, the damage to the planet, well, within the next 11 years, was released in October, is going to be irreversible. What happens after that?
Yeah, I think we have to, we have to sort of explain what they actually mean there. Essentially, as we continue to emit more carbon dioxide, if we want to reverse that, it becomes harder and harder, because to get back to where we need to be, the reductions that have to happen once we sort of reverse the trend are more and more challenging. The reductions have to be steeper and steeper. And what they were saying is that in 10 years' time, if that peak of emissions hasn't happened and the reductions aren't proceeding, then every 5 years of delay in beginning that downturn increases the amount by which we would overshoot this target of 1.5 degrees, which is considered the sort of safe guardrail for avoiding ever-increasing damage due to climate change. So it's not, I would say we're not heading for catastrophe, but every delay beyond that leads to ever-increasing risks and ever-increasing damages. So it's call for action. I think a nice analogy is somebody who knows that that if they carry on smoking, they've got a good chance of getting cancer, but they carry on smoking and then end up with third-degree cancer that's incurable. That's and that's the kind of situation that we're in at the moment. We know that the smoke we're emitting is leading to, if you like, climate cancer, and the longer we keep doing it, the higher the risk of terminal climate cancer, if you like.
And we also know the fossil fuel industry is using many of the same tactics that the tobacco industry used.
Exactly. I think they learned a lot from the tobacco industry, and many of the lobbyists who work for the fossil fuel industry have previous history in the tobacco industry. And that is what is really so frustrating for those who are working on the scientific assessment side, is that those people are incredibly vocal and incredibly skilled at creating an impression that it isn't an urgent problem, or that, for instance, so-called clean coal is the solution to the climate change problem, whereas it's most clearly not. And it's really, really hard for an individual member of public who isn't an expert and doesn't spend their life sort of trailing through all the different arguments to actually understand where the bullshit is and where the truth is when you get all of these conflicting stories coming through.
Absolutely. Professor Mark New, thank you so much. Director at African Climate and Development Initiative.